Okay, binary search trees. So binary search trees are a data structure that can perform all of those operations efficiently. Okay. So a binary tree is a tree with, where each node has at most two children. And each child is either a left child or a right child. So here, each node has a left child pointer, a right child pointer, and a pointer to its parent. The pointer to the parent is optional, because you can always find it just by walking down from the tree. Does anyone have questions about this? Binary search tree, each node has some key value, and this left subtree is, its entire left subtree has smaller key values, and its entire right subtree has larger key values. So, this guy's key is K, everything over here is smaller than K, and everything over here is larger than K. Okay? And so this on the left here is a binary search tree. So everything over here is bigger than 2, everything over here is smaller than 7, for example. This is not a binary search tree. It's something called a heap. If you guys know what that is, if you don't worry about it. And so the way we label the search trees makes searching for a key value easy, because we just walk down the tree and go either left or right depending on the relationship between what you're searching for and the key at the node you're currently looking at. Any questions on this? So this is some pseudocode for searching. So this is a recursive function. Basically, if you're trying to search in an empty tree, or you found your key value, then return where you are. If what you're searching for is smaller than the key value of where you are, then look in the left subtree, and if it's bigger, then look in the right subtree. So it works because the left and right subtrees are both binary search trees. So you just recursively call the routine, and that's what gives this simple algorithm. And the running time is going to be O of H, where H is the height of the tree. Does everyone see why it's O of H? Any questions about the search algorithm?
Well, it's recursive.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to talk about that at the end, but it really is the height of the tree, because depending on the structure of the tree, the height can be different from logging.
Right, if it's not balanced, then it's not going to be like that.
Okay. So now to find the minimum and the maximum. Basically, the minimum, you just keep walking left until you can't walk left anymore. And the maximum, you just keep walking right until you can't walk right anymore. Here, again, are the simple algorithms. Does everyone see why those work? Any questions on this? Huh? Okay. And this one is also O of H, where H is the height of the tree. Predecessor. Okay, so predecessor has a couple of cases. So in the first case, X has two children. Okay. So its predecessor is going to be this guy right here. Do you guys see why it's this guy right here? So this guy is the largest value in this subtree, right? So this is the largest guy that's smaller than X, right? So that would make it its predecessor. Yeah.
Well, I don't understand. If you have the two, let's say the root is 10, right?
Okay.
That's right. And to the right is maybe 11.
Right.
And then off of that you have like the 2 and the 13.
But this, you mean this is
13? No.
So you wanted this to be 10?
That one's 10.
Right.
And to the right, that would get the 11. And that one's 5.
Right.
Okay. So then off of the 11, over
there,
yeah, you'll have 2 and 13.
But
2. Why do you have 2 there?
Because 2 is... 2 is less than 10, so 2 would go. This everything over here is bigger than this, and everything over here is smaller than this. Does everyone see predecessor and successor? Okay, again. Well, in this case, the running time is going to be proportional to the height of the tree because, again, you're just walking down to the bottom of the tree where you find your answer. So now, if the node that you're looking at, so you say you're looking for the predecessor of this.
Yeah.
Is the largest in the left. So this guy is going to be the smallest in this subtree. Well, so it's right. It's this. Right. So this is bigger than X because it's over here, but it's the smallest guy that's over here. So it's the smallest guy.
Right. Under, so it's here. Right. Here also X, which also means this level.
No, no, no. Okay, so everything over here is bigger than X, right? I mean smaller than X. And everything over here is bigger than X. So this is the smallest guy. I mean the biggest guy that's smaller than X. And this is the smallest guy that's bigger than X. Right. Does everyone get that? No, because, I mean, this tree could be huge down here, so, you know, you could have to walk really far down to find that.
Okay, so the other case...
You want to find the predecessor of X, but X doesn't have a left subtree. So, in that case, its predecessor is going to be its first left ancestor, which means the first time if you're walking up, the first time you made the left. Okay. And so, the reason why right, so the reason why is because the predecessor, the successor of the predecessor of X is X, right? So here X is going to be the smallest value in the right subtree of its predecessor, right? So if you know, so we want to find the predecessor of 6. Okay. So 6 is going to be smaller than these guys because it's in their left subtree, but it's bigger than this guy because it's in his right subtree. So the pseudocode is saying, so this is a pseudocode for successor. So if X has a right subtree, then find the minimum value in its subtree. Otherwise, here you're just walking up the tree until you turn left, and then the first time you turn left is where you find your successor. Any questions about this? Okay. So to insert what we're going to do is basically is do a search until we find where the node should be, and when we get there, we insert it, replacing the null that we found, basically. Let me do an example. So let's say we wanted to insert 5 into this tree. Okay. So 5 is less than 10, so we're going to go this way. It's greater than 1, we're going to go this way. It's less than 9, it's less than 8. It's less than 6, so we would go this way, but there's nothing here. So this is where we're going to put 5. So I could say that you're not allowed to have duplicate keys and just sweep it under the rug. I mean, that's one way. The other way is you could either say, you can either say less than equal on the left, strictly greater than on the right, or, you know, less strictly less than on the left and greater than or equal to on the right. It's just a matter of convention. Okay, so here's the pseudocode. You start out at the root, and then while you haven't come across something that's empty, you compare the keys. If it's less than, then you go left. Otherwise, you go right. And then here you set the parent pointer properly, and then here you're going to change the root if you're inserting into an empty tree, and then here you're setting the proper left or right pointer of the parent of the node that you're inserting. Okay. So since this is just the search and then changing some pointers, this is also O of H. Anyone have questions on insertion? Deletion can be a little bit trickier than insertion because you're always inserting at a leaf, but you might not always be deleting a leaf. So again, there's three cases. In case A, where you're deleting is a leaf, and that's simple, you just set the pointer to null. In case B, the node has one child, so you can just cut it out. I'll draw examples on the board. And in case C, the node has two children, what you're going to do is take its successor and bump it up and then delete the successor. So in this tree, if we want to delete 5, it's simple. We could just take this guy's pointer and set him to null. And that deletes 5, right? So if we want to delete 8, again, that's not hard. We could just take 9 and set his left child to be 0.6 and take 6 as parent and bump him up to there. And then that'll cut 8 out. You can store the parent pointer to make these operations easier, or you could just, you know, do a search and stop one level above here. That's the case. Anyone have questions on case A or B? Okay. So case C, say we want to delete 10 from this tree. Basically, what we're going to do is relabel it 6 and then delete 6. Okay? So I'll show you.
So here's the pseudocode up here.
So, I mean, you can either do this, the predecessor or the successor. It's, again, it's just a matter of how you want to code it.
Okay.
So these first two lines are going to, first three lines, are going to determine which node is actually going to be removed from the tree. So if the node has a null pointer, that means that it doesn't have two children, then we're going to delete it. Otherwise, we're going to delete its successor in the tree.
Okay.
So now these lines are going to set x equal to y's non-null descendant if it exists. Okay. And then these are going to give X its new parent. So let's we're deleting this and Z. Okay. Z has two children. So this is its successor, so this is Y. So the left of Y is null, so X is going to be null. And so if Y is this parent, Y is the left child. Well, this should be siblings. Now we're going to so now we've moved this guy up here and delete this. That's what the last two points of lines are saying. So these here are, if you have to, so if this guy has had a child or had some nodes down here, you're going to want to reattach them to 5. That's what this stuff is doing. And then this is copying the key from 6 to 10.
Any questions on the deletion? Okay. So, all of those operations that I showed you, I showed were O of H in time. Now, if the search tree is perfectly balanced, then H is going to be logarithmic in height, which is good. But we could get unlucky and insert them in exact order, in which case we would just get a linked list, which would have height n, which is bad, obviously. So the height of the tree is something that we have to worry about if we want to guarantee a good running time. And if the order is perfectly random, then we can expect it to be log n in height. That's what this is saying. Okay. Any questions about this? In order to get perfectly balanced trees, we probably have to do about a linear amount of work every time we insert or delete a node. Because, for example, if our tree was this and it's perfectly balanced, we stick that in, that kind of messes everything up, right? But what we need isn't perfectly balanced trees. We need just pretty much balanced tree, so that means that its height is O of log n, giving all our operations that running time. So red-black trees are one of the data structures for binary search trees, and it's what started today. The idea is you give each node a color, and this coloring scheme is going to give us a height of log n. Any questions about this?
When you're building a balanced tree, you basically want to make sure that you build two nodes. For each height, you want to make sure that you're building two nodes.
Right. Right, if it was perfectly balanced, we'd say shaded one. Okay. So any questions about anything that I've covered yet today? No? Okay. So I'll start red-black trees now. Okay. So red-black trees have these properties. Every node is either red or black. Every leaf or null pointer is black. And if a node is red, then both of its children are black. And every single path from a node contains the same number of black nodes. Okay? Any questions about the definition? So, if the root of a red-black tree is black, can we just change its color to red? Did everyone hear that? I mean, basically, a black node can have red children, but a red node can't have red children. That's the idea behind that one.
Okay.
Okay.
So if an arbitrary node is red, can we change its color to black? No, because so here, if we change this to black, then the path from here is has black height 2, but this one only has a black height of 1.
Right. Does everyone see that?
Kind of tree would you have to maximize the number of nodes in a tree with black height h, which means that in any root to leaf path you cross h black nodes. Complete tree where every other level is colored red.
Okay.
So now, if you have 2 nodes, what are the different possible red-black trees look like?
Okay.
So, let's see. The little circles in this are just null pointers.
Okay.
So, the first is the first one, a red black tree?
No. Why not?
Right. Okay, what about the second one?
Yes.
Okay. What about the third one? Oh, wait. Yeah, okay, this one doesn't. Because this has black height 1 and this has black height 0. Okay, so this one is a red black tree because this path has black height 0 and so does this one. Okay, what about the last one? Is the last one on a red black tree? Why? Right. So this one has height 0, this one has height 1. Does everyone understand this
one? So which one is?
Only the third one is a red box tree. Black tree with n internal nodes has a height at most 2 log n log of n plus 1. Okay. So the first claim is that any subtree rooted at x has at least 2 to the black height of x minus 1 internal nodes.
Is that clear, or should I clarify that? Or clarify that? Okay.
So the idea is that, we'll say this guy has black height of 2. That means in every root to leaf path, he has to come across at least 2 black nodes.
I just come across exactly two black men. So the worst case would be everything underneath him is black. In which case the height here is 2 to the 2 minus 1, which is 3.
So this is the first claim. Oh. Okay, so here's the proof. So if X is a leaf, then its black height is 0. Right? So, it's true. Now, assume that it's true for all trees with black height less than black height of X. If X is black, right, then both subtrees have black height BH of X minus 1. Okay? And if X is red, then both subtrees have to have height black height BH of X. So, here, if this is black, right, this, and its black height is BH of X. Okay. That means that you step on BH of X black nodes in any path from here to a leaf, right? So here you have to step on BH of X minus 1. Right?
Why did minus 1 not possible?
Well, because you stepped on this one. So, so any path is going to have 1 plus BH of X minus 1 black node. Right? So this is 1. So any path is going to have BH of X black nodes on it, right? This path? So this is the first one.
Oh, BH of X is the total number of
black
nodes for the entire path?
Well, the entire path.
I thought it was just for that one thing.
So the number of black nodes that you step on when you walk from here to here is BH of X, right? So this is the first black node that you step on, and then from here down you step on BH of X minus 1. Right? Is that clear to everyone? Yeah. Right, exactly. So if this guy is red, then these are BH of X. That's what this line is saying. Okay? So the number of internal nodes is bigger than or equal to this is the number of nodes in the left subtree, which is this by induction. That's the number of nodes in the right subtree by induction, and then that counts the current node. And if you do the algebra, the n is bigger than or equal to 2 to the bh of x minus 1. Does everyone get this last line here, though? The algebra? So this is what we're proving here. Right, so from here to here is proving this first claim. Okay? So this is a claim, right? This isn't necessarily true. So this proves this, right? N is bigger than or equal to 2 to the dh of x minus 1. That's what this is claiming. Okay? Does everyone follow that? No? Okay. So, okay. So we want to know the number of internal nodes in any tree that has black height BH of X, right? And we're saying that that is bigger than or equal to 2 to the BH of X minus 1, right? So we'll do it by induction. So if BH of X equals 0, X is a leaf, right? So 2 to the BH of X minus 1 is 0. So there's... one and two. I guess it depends on how you want to define it. So it's true for BH of X equal to 0. So now assume that it's true for all trees with black height smaller than BH of X.
Okay.
Now, from over here, if this node is red, right, then these guys' black height are both BH of X minus 1, okay? And if this guy's red, then these guys' black heights are both BH of X, right? So, the number of internal nodes in this tree, okay, is the number of internal nodes in this tree plus the number of internal nodes in this tree plus 1, right? So the number of internal nodes in this tree is 2 to the BH of X minus 1 by induction, and the same thing for this tree, and then plus 1 for the root. So if you do the algebra, you get this. So n is bigger than or equal to 2 to the BH of X minus 1. Is it clear now? I mean, I'll take questions.
I don't see how that proves it.
Well, all this stuff is proving this claim. Right, so I'll use this claim then to prove the lemma. Okay. Well, so it doesn't matter because in the worst case, the root node is black, so it has this many. So in the red case, it has more. Yeah. So now H is let H be the height of our tree. Okay. So any root to leaf path has to have at least half of its nodes have to be black, because the path can't have two consecutive red nodes, right? Does everyone see why it can't be two consecutive red nodes? Right, because if a If a note is red, then both of its children have to be black. So as soon as you step on a red note, the next note you're going to step on is guaranteed to be black. So the black kite of X has to be bigger than H over 2, right? And N... The number of internal nodes is bigger than this, right? So you just substitute this equation in, and you get 2 to the h over 2 minus 1. That is bigger than 2 to the h over 2 minus 1. So if you take the log of both sides, then you get log of n plus 1 is bigger than or equal to h over 2. So h is less than or equal to 2 log n plus 1. Does everyone see the... Yeah. You're not always going to alternate. I mean, so a legal red black tree could be a complete tree with all black nodes, for example. That's a legal red black tree. It's not one that you get in this algorithm necessarily, but it's a legal red black tree. Right. Any questions on any of these lines on the second slide? Does everyone get this, what this is saying? Okay. So what this all means is that if we can come up with an algorithm that will maintain the properties of red-black tree on insertions and deletions, that we would be guaranteed that our tree will have height that's no worse than twice optimal. So our red-black tree is going to have time O of log N on all of those operations. Does everyone understand that? Yeah, I don't have any more slides. Does anyone have any questions at all about what I said today? No? Well, if people have questions, I'll take them. So. What time is it supposed to be? 3:40. I'm not the TA, so I honestly don't know what it is.
You said it's a red black tree. But yes, constitutive red node. Right?
Okay, so these little things are null pointers. They're not nodes.
No, this is not node.
This is a null pointer.
Oh, okay. I know, I mean, can you explain a little bit what this means?
That's assignment. So you're setting y equal to z.
Y equal to z.
Yeah.
And why not just write up this?
Well, because Skeena's used to like older programming languages, where this is the way that you assign, and then this is how you compare.
Oh, okay, I see. Can you give me a slide of how this is going to be? Thank you.
Yes, log and Twitter.
It's a line
breaker. Oh, okay, yeah, this question is
about
it's poetic.
Right, I mean, basically the idea is you want to just estimate it, so just make up something that sounds reasonable, I guess. You know, so for example, there's 50 states, and then estimate the number of towns in each state.
They want
to be right, it doesn't have to be like that. Yeah, tons of towns in each
state.
That is cute.
I think the thing got your voice also on it. At the end of it, it's going to say that is cute.
The start number. Everything else is about the same. So why don't you do the start number?
Did it
solve? Yeah,
it
solved.
That's
what I mean.
Oh, that's what you did.
Yeah, I solved it. No, I was just sitting there and I solved it. got about all the beams done. Really have to do the pump.
I mean, they don't really
have to do anything.
Are the
hard ones?
Basically, yeah.
Oh,
it's all these, we got these done on, you know, this is easy. How many was it?
This is just the way it's
so multiplying.
If you do all this stuff, then you build and take a tree as a
this is only have a steep divide of time. Well, I have it at home. I don't have it at home.
Right.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well,
so
you should have figured it out.
I can just usually do it.
By the way, Sparky has time commands and a second file.
Yeah, BCC. What are they anyway, like socks?
No, they take input and then for varying n, it gets the performance.
Really, actually, the command line argument to input it?
Right.
Or it doesn't prompt it?
Well, yeah, so you
well,
want
to
put
command line argument, so... The command line argument I had to put in, actually I didn't have to put in, I was using signal.
Oh.
I'm saying you actually have to do
so
it in Sparky,
you
might have to put
so
line right
one
there.
So,
you
want me to finish it as so the worst case
but I guess when
is
when stuck,
it's
stuck,
it's
like the
small
time.
Right.
You said, I forget, I'll take care of the four.
See, I think that's
kind of
right.
Right,
so you want something big.
You better do work that you can prepare for the next time. Really, this is
pretty good. It's not a bad one.
So you want anything like this?
I got some 350 to get this.
So the worst case is going to be when its pieces are small,
right?
I should have my I don't understand, like 200 megs. What part of 200 megs can fit 20 into? You know, have a feeling they can have some stupid magnitude. So the easy solution is to actually go look up on Google, like WinSP memory tweets, and just read a whole bunch of tweets. That isn't as far as the easy solution is to find someone who knows what you're doing. Just probably do it. You don't know what you're doing.
Well, virtual memory, I ran into the
so then
I can't help with that.
No.
So if you've got
Right, you can't have two consecutive red numbers. So at least half of you know what's happening. So now, this, you're just taking this, and substituting it into this, to get n squared by the 2 to the 8 over 2 minus 4. And then you just add them to both sides like this. And then you take the log of both sides of this. So you take log n plus 1 and then you equal to each over 2. And then you multiply both sides by 2. You get n plus less than or equal to 2 times log of n plus 1. And that's what we want to do. But you know, so you know that this is bigger than
like before when I heard that you said you were going to have the one, so that's in order like that.
You have to show me one because I was calling one. I only have after I only see it. I didn't look at it.
What do we have to ask about one?
She remember? Because we got B, we did the
C. Oh yeah, remember the one we have to ask
about? Oh yeah. Oh, it's question two?
Yeah, not question three.
Okay, sorry.
So this question, what's it? Well, actually, it's written down like this. If I prove that algorithm takes data of n squared for k time, is it possible that it takes all time on some input? See, I'm kind of confused about this. We're kind of confused about this one because, well, couldn't it be possible that, like, in some cases it could take all of n time, like, you know, you have to look like before the n gets really large or something like that?
Well, we were saying that when we looked at the question, that if it was like worst case time, then it's not possible because you already crossed that point and you're having really large numbers. So
what worst case time means is, okay, so you have an algorithm that takes input. So for each different kind of input of size n, it'll take a different amount of time.
Right.
So there's one of them that'll give you the absolute worst time.
Right.
That's worst case time.
So could that be possibly, like if the algorithm says that the worst case time is O of like n to the 10, right? Mm-hmm. Could it be possible that there are specific inputs, right? Like O of n squared?
Right, exactly.
The question I had was because this is data and it's like data n squared, so it's not the worst time. So it means that at a tight bound, it's n squared.
Okay, so.
So, and then it says, is it possible that it takes O n on some inputs?
but that's an upper bound. That's what I was confused about.
Okay, so what worst case time means is that of all the different inputs of size n, there's one that takes the absolute worst. Right, but so the, what the tightness means is that that function is bounded above and below.
Right.
But that's of the absolute worst of that size. There could be another input of the same size that it runs really fast.
Okay, so it could actually happen for all of them.
Right.
Because there are always some inputs, right? Could do it.
Right.
And for D, it's false because it's all inputs.
Where
this is common, this is all
input.
Right.
Because there has to be at least one input that's gonna invalidate.
Right.
Maybe there's a possibility where there's a graph that is in the type down range that is older and that's in that range. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm 1.6.
Why did I put 1.6? Oh, right. Okay, I have to show you my 1.6. Very messy. okay. So 1.6. It says if I have f of n equals, g of n, then is it possible for this? So I did, I wrote down the whole thing, and see, this is the part where I sort of made up. It's the anti-log. Because I got to the log part, because I multiply both sides by log 2 of 2, which is 1.
Okay.
And then I moved f of n up, because that's where it is, like, when you multiply the null function to a log, it's really equal to log base 2 2 to the f of n.
Okay.
Right? And so when I got to this part, because I want to end up like this, what I did was I did an anti log. But then I remembered that anti log was really 2 to the log 2. So I did 2 to the log, and I think it stays the same pretty much for this.
Right.
And so like it got to the point where f of n is equal to 2 to the
So
in the end, like I'm thinking that I can just like leave it like this, and then just say because it's like this, then this is true.
Right. Well, so I guess the point is
because my c is now like 2 to the g of n to the c, but it's not c times 2 to the
f. Right. So you've got 2 to the f of n. Right. Well, okay. So this is 2 to the c times.
The first one is the where you have a hopefully nothing in the science.
Oh, that's fine.
For the first one, where you have to like test a little program stuff like that. Well, I was looking into the code basically, and just some intuition like from what these are, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the like basically the end values I have on all of them. But I'm not exactly sure how I could use like the program to test it, like using the time. I mean, I could use the time and check like how long it takes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But how would I be able to distinguish that from n from n squared? I mean, n squared to n cubed or something like that. But they're both like wrapped into exponentially. I'm not sure how to graph
what's the precise question? I'm not the TA, so I don't know.
Well, basically, we just have to prove that the specific program, right, or function it is, has a certain runtime.
Actual
in practice. So use the different command command when you select to the parent value and that is just a decision of the luxury ethics.
You just
time.
Run, you just do time and then whatever
the program.
And then we'll run it and then we'll tell you how long it
takes. In case more specific information, we just can't do this. The question is create roughly as expected by theory. Like my theory is like, you know, for like, or instructions that would be like n squared, obviously.
Right.
But,
so I know
what, yeah.
I mean, I guess in general, you don't have to worry about being exact. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have to prove it with some exact constant. Just say that this rough, maybe draw it and then draw like n squared and see if it shows they have it roughly the same. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or if it's n cubed, should draw n cubed and then show that they have roughly the same growth rate.
Oh, okay. So n cubed and n squared look kind of the same. That's why. So I don't know how we're going to be using the time to. No, I mean, but they both go exponential when I was using the time
demand. But n cubed definitely is fine.
I mean, don't worry about being too exact. You know, I guess it's anything.
Okay.
Right. So we square it. Like they're going like pretty slowly. So I was wondering, like when I did this, I made it because obviously, you know, the last square and the square root of the end are going to be greater than the theorem. So I said that, you know, the theorem would be the theta or the omega of it because it's lower bound.
Right.
But I wasn't sure if it was in theta.
No, because
it was stuck in the end.
Right. I mean, well, yeah. I guess to be short, yeah, that's.
Yeah, I do want to be short. And the last time, this part five is not just to estimate, it's actually to estimate how many cities and towns are in the United States. I'm a little curious about that, so I just did I did upper and lower for that.
Okay.
And you.
So this isn't the kind of thing that he's looking for. I mean, he's looking for a number and then a reasonable explanation of why that's correct. So, I mean, I guess just come up with something that sounds reasonable and then write it down, if that makes sense. I mean, don't write like five, you know what I'm saying? Write something that's reasonable and then say that this is why I think it's reasonable.
I wasn't really sure what he meant by that, so I did like O given, and I'm just saying like, it's 50 times n because it's 50 states. Mm-hmm. So, you don't know how many states, like how many cities and towns are in each state, so you have to, like, I put n so that, and I said that, like, it'll be in that range of like.
Well, I mean, you could just, I guess you could maybe guess how many cities are in each state. I mean,
actually
want an
exact number.
Well, I mean, it's not going to look it up in the atlas and then give you 10 points off if you're not exactly right. You know, it just has to be reasonable.
Yeah, and this part is a little confusing. How am I supposed to do it? If there's only words in this,
well, you could use the number of pages and then say, you know, there are X words on each page and there's, you know, whatever pages.
Can I talk about
actually
permitting? He
says one piece of paper, that was a mouthful, actually.
I guess I'm sure you can use the back. As long as it's neat.
And about the city question you asked me, would it be okay to be like, okay, the area code is telephone numbers?
possible combinations of area codes.
But that's, then, that would be reasonable.
Okay. Yeah. And then, like, the possible combination of zip codes. So, like, there's a big difference one you can do the third, one you can do the fifth. And then, like, it will be somewhere maybe in between there, so I said the 10th and 4th. Is that...
Hey, as long as it sounds reasonable.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.